Everyone, this podcast is brought to you by Global Shop Solutions ERP software. Simplify your manufacturing by scheduling a demo at globalshopsolutions.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Upside Swings NBA Draft Podcast, the podcast of the highest ceiling. I'm your host, Bryce Hendricks, joined as always by the great Cooper Klein and the wonderful Stone Hansen. And the college basketball season is officially underway. Draft season is now in full swing, and we're here to do our what is going to be a kind of a weekly catch-up. Just talk about the games we watched. These are usually going to follow the four teams that we all picked in our little preseason preamble thing. But it's not always. You know, sometimes I'm going to watch a game looking at a different guy, and I'm going to talk about that probably or whatever. Like this week, I haven't got to OTE yet. You're going to have to wait like probably another week and a half, 2 weeks to get to for me to get to OTE, but we're going to talk about as much as we can, as much as we watched. But before we get too into it, Coop, Stone, my friends, how you doing?
Doing well. I was stuffing my food down so I can make this pod in time, and then had to walk my dog and was running as fast as I could. So my stomach is a bit upset, but my mind is clear and fresh and ready to speak about some awesome prospects.
Yeah, this is like quite nearly my bedtime these days. So I'm a little bit tired, but I've been watching college basketball all day, working out, and I'm excited to talk to y'all and talk about some great games I've been able to watch over this week. Best time of the year.
Yeah, what everyone's here for actually is when did we eat our dinner? That's what we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, I'm currently eating popcorn as we record this podcast because it's a very low-calorie snack. So, let's just dive right into it. I'll start quickly with Duke. Duke has started their season 2-0. Derek Lively, who, maybe by some, is the most touted guy in this class, and Derek Whitehead, also very touted Duke recruit. Derek did not play in either of their first two games. Lively only played in the second game against USC Upstate. He played 14 minutes in that game. 2-for-2 from the field, looked fine. I have not watched all that game because ended up being like 84-38. Just did not really seem like it was all that worth my time. I did watch Duke play Jacksonville though, and ended up being 71-44. So quite a blowout, but it wasn't necessarily it felt a little closer than that, I guess. Obviously that's a 37-point win for Duke, but they were only up 16 at half, and they played their starters a good amount. So just some things I want to take away. Jeremy Roach legitimately looked very, very good. He's someone who has been in my mind for a while as maybe he could stick around as like a third point guard in the NBA, probably more like a G League guy, but there's some stuff to like there. He's a solid athlete, really solid pull-up shooter. And the catch and shoot stuff looked really good. It looks like he's finally figured that out. 4 assists, 3 turnovers, not great, but he seemed really impressive to me. He's kind of a jitterbug athlete, doesn't get all the way to the rim, but can get downhill a little bit and make some plays, gets over screens with ease. I really liked his defensive stuff. Some work to be done, but someone I'm interested to monitor going forward. Tyrese Proctor, who some were really, really excited for. I was always more skeptical, and this game did not do a ton to sway me. Only 2 points on free throws. He went 0 of 8 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3. All his threes very wide open. None of them were particularly close. His missed twos were varied. He took like one pull-up, and the pull-up itself looked fine. The mechanics on it looked fine, but he was way long. He missed a wide open layup. Duke ran this gorgeous sort of Spain, almost like a Spain set, but not quite because it was against a hard hedge. But Roach set a screen on the hedge man, and it just got Proctor right to the rim, but he just gassed the layup, just threw it over the rim and lost it. It was really weird. Just kind of looked out of sorts. Ryan Young is like a back to the basket white post who can't play defense, but he was 6-6 from the field because of course he was. I think the real sort of intrigue that some people are going to get from this game was Mark Mitchell. He went 7-14 from the field, 2-5 from 3, which really caught, that's 40%, really kind of caught the eyes of some people. all his threes were stupid wide open. Like, they were just not going to guard him out there. He was still very hesitant, even though he got five up. He had some moments. He's a very good vertical athlete. For me, the worry was just he looked really, really stiff laterally. He was getting blown by consistently. Very little mobility in his hips. Relies a lot on kind of putting hands on guys as they drive. Had some okay moments as a help defender, but overall, I didn't leave super impressed with Mark Mitchell. I need to see more. There's some stuff there, but I wasn't like a huge fan. The person who did really pop to me was Kyle Filipowski, who had 10 points and 12 rebounds to go along with 3 assists and 2 blocks. Did have 3 turnovers, did get a couple fouls, but 2 of 5 from the 3-point line, had a couple nice grab and go moments. Not a ton, mostly just sort of playing his role right now, but made some great decisions in the pick and roll as like the pop guy or on the short roll. Really nice touch. I buy the shot. He's my favorite non-direct prospect on this Duke team, and he's someone I'm excited to keep seeing. So there you go. That's my first team. Stone, I'm going to throw this over to you to talk about the Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, this is pretty much the Oregon Wears at this point, because there's really only one prospect I'm here to talk about, which is Khalil Ware, who had his ups and downs, I would say, within this game. His first game as a freshman, so I wasn't expecting like an otherworldly type performance to begin with against Florida A&M. But he really, I think, shined defensively. I think that's in this game where a lot of the intrigue came about for me. And so I kind of talked about briefly before we got into this year how much I liked him as a rim protector. I think he did a really great job of that. In this game, he had 3 blocks, and really he had 4 blocks, but there is one time where this guy was called for a travel right as he blocked the shot, so it didn't, I think, count towards the box score. But nonetheless, he was really effective as a shot blocker and rim protector. One of them came from the 3-point line where he just swatted a shot right in like the third row. Perimeter wise, he, I think, needs to, throughout the season, figure out how to effectively stay in front of guys. I think he has the length to really do so, but I think the footwork needs some work throughout the season. In the second half, with whatever guard was sort of near him, he'd go, and they were running double teams where he and another Oregon guard would double team one of Florida A&M's ball handlers. He did a really good job in terms of taking away tons of space just with his wingspan. But there are times when the ball handler is just trying to get around Ware because he knows the footwork isn't there and he could probably do so. So I'm looking for that to improve. The first half, they used him a lot as like this post-up guy. Wasn't really feeling that. And then the second half, he really tried to make himself a threat from the 3-point land. I think he shot 1 of 3 from three. 1 of 2, excuse me. And he looked okay. The second shot was easy, spot up. In the first one, I think it was a little bit more on movement and he missed that. There were 3 shots where he just missed wide open, layups. There's one, a super easy tip in with no one was around him. Another one was like a layup in transition. And it's just an easy bunny that he missed off the rim. So those are things he's going to have to clean up. Not overly worried about that. He had really nice passes outside of double teams, which I thought was really impressive as a big. That's something that I was not really impressed with. I think it was DeAndre Ayton a few years back where it was really a problem for him. And that's something with bigs, I think, that is not talked about enough, but is actually an important skill to have. And there are twice where he, I think it was back-to-back possessions actually too, where he hit backdoor cutters that were going straight to the rim for an assist or for a shot. And he looked really good with that. So there are things overall I think he needs to clean up. But defensively especially, I thought he was really good. And from my personal count, I think when he was the primary defender, offense shot like 1 of 6 against him. So he did his duty on that end. But offensively, there's definitely some things that he'll need to clean up in the next game that I watch, because I didn't see the UCF game at this point in time yet.
Yeah, the UC Irvine loss was really head scratching. Oregon just looked completely asleep from what I saw of that. I'm a Pac-12 guy, so I'll watch a ton of Oregon along with Stone. But they just looked completely asleep. They just didn't really know what they were going. Offense is going to be a major struggle for this team, because Will Richardson is not really a point guard, but they don't really have anyone else to initiate.
They don't offense. Have a point guard at all.
Yeah, in this they team. Have the same issue that WSU has, where it's just there's not like a true offensive initiator on this team. Honestly, Ware is probably the highest upside passer on this squad. Stone, I wanted to ask you really fast, just for my own enjoyment, because I want to know what you think. How'd you feel about Nate Biddle in this game?
You're trying to get me in trouble on this podcast and the first segment of this podcast. There's actually like things that I like about the shot, where if he could do more than just shoot occasionally, I'd be interested, but there's not much outside of that I really enjoy about him as a prospect. It's not to say he won't be an effective college player, and he does not lack for confidence. There's some fadeaway jump shots that he should not be taking as a man named Nate Biddle. So we will see how the season progresses, but hopefully Ware ends up being a larger portion of the offense as the season goes on.
Yeah, I'd expect him to start by the end of the year. He came off the bench in this one against FAMU and only played 19 minutes. I expect him to start over Rivaldo Soares going forward, because Soares is really struggling early. Coop, I'll throw this to you. Tell us about your Houston Cougars.
Yeah, so I was at the first game, and I watched the second game, obviously. But the two standout guys are, of course, the top Coug recruit ever, Jairus Walker. I think we'll talk about him more later, but he really struggled in the first game shooting from the floor. I think he took like 4 or 5 like 3-point shots, and he didn't make a single one. Couldn't hit anything from mid-range, couldn't hit anything at the rim. But his effort, he grabbed a ton of boards, played great team defense, and he's a great stylistic anchor. Kind of he's no Fabian White in any way, but he plays sort of the same role as a stabilizer and sort of as the more conservative defender of the group. And in the second game, he hit 2 threes, looked really confident, could get to his spots, and was completely automatic from everywhere. The touch looked incredible. He was just pretty dominant in the second game. And then Juwan Roberts looks like a completely different player this year. Only 6'7", but has basically been automatic down in the post. Great defender. I don't think he's like an NBA guy, so I won't spend too much time on him. But the other guy that Bryce and I were really high on, Terrence Arsenault, played pretty well in the first game. He hit some shots in both games, and the defense was better in the first game. In the second game, he looked a little bit lost, got a bit too energetic, I think is the word to use. But he got this one catch at the 3-point line, hit one dribble going to his right towards the baseline, and was completely contested. Guy had a hand up over his face, drained it, nothing but net. It was incredible. Shed kind of played like shit, kind of disappointing. Could not hit the back of a barn with his shot. I don't think he made a single three over the two games, or if he made like one. The passing was great though. Defense was solid, but the shooting and the finishing and too many turnovers. Sasser shot the ball really well. If he can be a little bit more consistent, be a bit more consistent with his offensive generation and defense in general, I think he could really be that player of the year candidate we were hoping for. But the shot was off, and he only scored like single digit points last night. And then Ramon Walker, I think, is really him and Tremont Mark have probably, those are the two guys who I would argue have looked like the second best prospect right now for this year's draft on the Cougs team. Ramon has been great defensively. The shot's been falling. He's been aggressive, diving for loose balls, does a lot of the little stuff. The guy who's really shined, Tremont Mark, 6'5" junior guard, can hit shots from all over, can defend. He's the fastest decision maker on the floor at all times. So most of the other guys, they're going to get the ball and they're going to like do a little jab and like look at the floor. Tremont gets the ball. He immediately makes a decision. He is moving the ball. He is flying. We talked in the Cougs pod about Arsenault being the starter and Tremont, those being the two guys who will probably start at the three. And I think Tremont is going to get it. He is just like the perfect connector who can also get his own shot, make passes, defend, do everything. And it's really hard to see. Like, I need him to be healthy. I need him to be healthy to see him with a full year, because I really think he can be an NBA guy coming up.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of a lot of this Houston squad in terms of them potentially being NBA guys going forward. Tremont Mark is someone who I've been in on since his freshman year. Obviously, as Coop mentioned, Arsenault is someone who I thought is like he's, if the draft were tomorrow, I'd take him top 20. As crazy as that might sound to some, he might not even be a real one and done, but I really, really like Tremont, or I really like Arsenault. Obviously, Jarace Walker, funky creator bet. Honestly, might end up going top five in this draft. He has looked that good to me in what I've seen. So I'm really interested to monitor this team going forward. Moving on to my next team, I'm going to talk about the Creighton Blue Jays. This was a team I was really, really excited to grab because I feel like they have like seven guys who are at least somewhat fringy. Obviously, the top sell is Arthur Kaluma, but they also have Baylor Shireman, Trey Alexander, Ryan Kalkbrenner, and Ryan Nemhart all in their starting lineup. And that's not to mention guys like Mason Miller and, even like Francisco Farabello off their bench, who isn't really a guy, but is at least like really solid. So they have some guys and a lot of players I've been really interested to monitor. And I've only watched one game of theirs so far. They kicked the crap out of North Dakota. Didn't necessarily feel a need, but I do really like St. Thomas. I think St. Thomas, who they played in their first game, is a really, really solid low major with some real talent. So I'm actually going to talk first about the St. Thomas guys I really liked because I can't help myself. The first one is Riley Miller, who's like a 6'0" guard, but is legitimately one of the most funky shooters I've ever seen. He's a super senior. I actually think he's technically a sixth year senior. So he's not like a guy, but I could see him like murdering the G League next season just by like he had some really, really insane movement shots, pull ups, step backs. Like he gets it done all over in a bunch of different ways. Really, really fun to watch. But the real guy that popped out to me is Andrew Rode. I think that's how it's said. It's R-O-H-D-E. He's like a 6'6 guard and legit 6'6 who can actually handle the ball, get downhill and make plays. His passing really popped. He struggled to shoot the ball a little bit early in the season, but he looks comfortable. It looks good. I think he's going to shoot because everyone on St. Thomas can at least kind of shoot, except for Bjorklund, but that's a little different. Even he took shots. But Rode is like, he really, really impressed me for a true freshman to do what he did against Creighton. He had this one play where he's running a pick and roll and he just rose above and hit this tough, tough runner over Ryan Kalkbrenner, who is like a legit 7-footer with I think a 7'2 or 7'3 wingspan. That's a tough, like for a true freshman on the road in his first ever college game to do. Damn. Like I was impressed. So Andrew Rode, legitimate guy to keep an eye on. He's probably like a transfer away from being an actual NBA guy if he ever will be, but he impressed me. And I think there's a lot to like there. Moving on to Creighton, the people you actually want to hear about, Arthur Kaluma, he looked all right. He had 17 and 8. But man, they were just like, the shot still looks really far away. Even in their second game, let me check real fast. The shot looked really far away. He shoots this super high arcing jumper that just doesn't look good. He went 1 of 2 in his second game, so he only took 2. In the first game, he took 7 and only made 1. The make was completely wide open, like no one even close. The drive still looked good. I think he's just more raw than I kind of hoped. You know, people talk about that FIBA bump. Well, a lot of what that is just a bump in experience. He doesn't look like someone who's gone through that. He looks like a raw freshman who has moments. And that's not what I wanted to see. Also, really worry for me that Kalumba had 0 steals and 0 blocks in 27 minutes against a team that passes a lot, takes a lot of shots. Like, there were plenty of opportunities for him to get in passing lanes, and he just didn't. My personal favorite player on Creighton's roster is Baylor Shireman. I think he is one of the best shooters on earth, on the planet right now. Some of the shots he takes and makes are insane, while he's also like just a really sound, safe shooter. Like he'll hit the open ones. I honestly think he could afford to be more quick with his trigger. He's a really quick, like, pull-up shooter, and whenever he wants to, he'll get into that. But off the catch, sometimes he's like, I think he's trying too hard to make the extra pass. And sometimes it's like, just let it rip. Just shoot that. You're a good enough shooter. But that's something I'll monitor going forward. His passing looked great. He was all over. He had 10 rebounds. He had 11 and 10 in this game, 3 assists, a steal, a block, pretty high rising dunk, despite kind of coming off a goofy foot in transition. I really like Shireman. I think he is a borderline first round talent. Ryan Nemhard really struggled with efficiency, hit 1 really tough shot, but his passing is, 5 assists, 0 turnovers. He's like the carbon copy of his brother, just shorter. He plays exactly like Andrew, just a pick and roll maestro, makes the right play all the time. Trey Alexander, someone a lot of people are really high on. He's like a fun, funky slasher who just takes some really crazy angles to the rim, but the shot needs to come around. 1 of 5 today. Doesn't look particularly smooth to me, and he doesn't want to take it. He's very hesitant. Kalkbrenner, finally, not really like a guy for me. I prefer, if I'm going to take a white center, I prefer Colin Castleton. But Kalkbrenner he's solid. He's probably someone who's going to get looks at the next level just because he's big enough, he's got good touch, and he'll sometimes step out and take a 3. Also, like, make solid reads. I thought his passing was fine, even though he had 0 assists. And finally, Mason Miller is a redshirt freshman, but he's like 6'8", and he has some insane touch moments. The shot looks all right. He was 2 of 2 from 3 in this game. Both wide open catch and shoot from the corner, but they looked good. And he had this one, like, drive where he got into a floater that looked really nice. Just someone I want to keep an eye out for because he's pretty young, someone who I liked a lot. All right, Stone, I will throw this to you to talk about the G League Ignite if you're ready.
Yeah, I so far only watched the game versus the Oklahoma City Blue. So hopefully by the next time we talk, I'll have the other games up to date. So this was their first game for the Ignite for this season, apart from the exhibition games versus the Metro Yambas. In this game, one thing I didn't even consider when we were drafting the teams was that I get to watch all the opponents that Ignite faces. And I was really excited when I saw our boy, Jalen Williams, Jalen with a Y, J Will, for the Oklahoma City Blue. I'll start with them really quick. Just kind of give a brief guys who stood out to me in that game. Jalen Williams, of course, the Thunder draft pick out of Arkansas, who has been playing for the Blue, I think, more than he's played for the Thunder so far this year. The passing looks just as awesome as it did in college. Like, it's so, it looks even faster somehow. Like, he sees things even faster than he did in college, which is wild. They're playing him a lot from the top of the key. And he's just making passes to cutters, passes to the wings. Really cool to see. And I hope it translates to the NBA someday. Rebounded really hard as well. Try to take charges as always. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But Overall, I love Jalen Williams just as much as I did while I watched him at Arkansas. Lindy Waters is someone who I liked from watching Thunder games last year. To be honest, before then, I hadn't really watched really any Lindy Waters, the third. And in this game, again, the shot just looks really awesome. Not sure he does much else on the court, but as a shooter, it's pretty interesting the things that he can do and how little of space he needed. Jamias Ramsey, who I liked a lot pre-draft, ended up being a large miss for me considerably, unfortunately. But this is probably the best basketball I have seen Ramsey play since high school, honestly. Like, he played excellent in this game, super aggressive, shot the ball well for his standards, and just the fact that he was able to get downhill so easily in this game was really impressive, and I'm still rooting for him, even though he's probably not the first-round pick that I had once hoped. DJ Wilson, former Rockets legend, as Cooper's well aware, played really well in this game as well, and super aggressive, especially rebounding the ball. So, even
is he back in the G?
He's playing for the Blue.
What?
But
that is
this is a team I'm pretty excited. If he plays like this, he'll get a shot, because he played out of his mind in this game. For the G League, I spent probably too much time in the Blue. For the G League, Leonard Miller was the Leonard Miller that we both love and pull our hair out when watching him. He had some really awesome plays, some deflections defensively, some really, like, obviously fluid movement that he always showcases. He had a really cool pass to Mojave King, who had a backdoor cut, and Miller just bulleted that sucker right to him. But he seems like exceptionally jumpy and over-aggressive defensively. I think some of it might have just been nerves from his first, I guess, professional game. So, you know, in the following games as they catch up, hopefully that comes down a bit. But he seemed a bit over-ambitious defensively. Mojave King overall in this game I thought was good, even though he didn't shoot the ball exceptionally well. I really like how they're coaching this team and trying to put these guys in places where they can develop, yet they're playing to their strengths simultaneously for a lot of these guys. So I think this is a really well-coached team. And King, to that point, was, I think he took three catch-and-shoot threes in this game. He only made one, I believe. And the one that he did make was actually this step back, where he created an insane amount of space on the step back three. So that was really interesting and not something I had really seen from Mojave before. So hopefully that is something that continues throughout the season. And he is extremely quick with the ball from, like, end to end on the court. He was really aggressive grabbing rebounds in this game, and taking it end to end a couple times where he was able to draw a foul. I'm probably bearing the lead on this with Bryce, pronounce it real quick, because I'm going to embarrass myself. I'm hearing it pronounced so many different ways.
So we always said F.A. Abogidi, but supposedly he now wants it pronounced F.A. Abogidi. And that's obviously more fun to say. Obviously, yeah. I'll respect his let's respect his wishes on what he would like to be called. So F.A. Abogidi it is. And I honestly just, my only regret is I feel a little bad that I was saying it wrong the past 2 years. Abogidi is in fact more fun. So
yeah, so Abogidi had a amazing game. He started off the first quarter with 17 points, I think, just out of his mind. He was playing, he was hitting shots from all over. He had a turnaround hook shot, turnaround fadeaway, a couple just like quick mid-range shots, and then just real like old school bangers where he's up against two big guys and fights his way and gets the tough shots. So he was really shooting from all over outside of the three-point land, and I was very, very impressed, having not seen much of him before this game. So as the season goes on again, I'll be focusing in on him, because I hadn't really seen much prior to this, but I was extremely impressed. I just don't want to put all my eggs into one basket where it felt like this was the game of all games to watch a Boogedie. I think he shot 9 of 10, which is pretty insane. And then I was actually someone I've not been very impressed with up until that game was Shareef O'Neal. Didn't do a lot in terms of more traditional big things, but there were, I think, three actual like and one opportunities he created for himself by just grabbing the rebound, going up really strong. Wasn't awful defensively, but definitely someone you don't want like on the perimeter or anything. But he looks improved from when we last saw him at LSU. So that was a good sign to see. Someone that is not in this class was London Johnson. Didn't play in this, or he played minimally in this game. Won't be in 23, obviously, but I think he's in 24. I was underwhelmed with him. Again, he's extremely young. This is his first professional game. I thought impressed defensively, where he was fighting well over screens. Didn't have a lot of opportunity offensively to get going either or get out of this funk, but just felt like he was going towards the rim without much of a plan. So, again, he's young, and this is his first professional game, so I'm not putting too much into that. Scoot Henderson had sort of a surprisingly off passing night that game. There are a few times where he just had like inaccurate pocket passes that ended up being kickballs or turnovers. There's one where he tried to do a one-handed cross-court swing with his right hand from the right side of the court to the left side, ended up getting picked off pretty easily. So just an off night, it felt like, for Scoot. Even though he was doing his typical like mid-range cooking, especially towards the end of the game, and created a lot of foul opportunities to try and get back into this one. And then lastly, I'll try and speed it up because there's so many guys to talk about on this roster. Sidy Sissoko did not play, so there's not much to say about him. Aubrey Dawkins was just amazing as a shooter. Like, this is the purest shot I might have ever seen in my entire life. This is ridiculous. It looks like an angel's wings is just carrying the ball into the net. It's beautiful to watch. The final guy was Babacar Sané. I'm going to get clarification on how to pronounce that. He's also in the 24 class, I believe, which I wasn't even aware he was on the Ignite until I watched this game, to be honest. So tells you how bad of a analyst I am. But he actually played a decent amount of minutes in this game, more than London Johnson. And he was more of like, I guess, this forward that they used him as. And had like big man qualities to him. So I've never seen him before. I don't think I've even heard of him before this game, which is probably embarrassing to say on air, but he was really impressive in the small amount of minutes that I saw. So again, there's so many guys on this team, and it's going to take a long time every time I have to talk about them each week, but definitely going to be my favorite of the teams that I'm covering this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out also Shareef O'Neal, 4 of 5 from the field, -9 plus minus. But I mean, Scoot was -16 in this game. It looks like the best plus minus was Pujetter.
They were up by like 30 at halftime in this game. This is a wild game.
Actually, it looks like Babacar Sané was plus 11 in his min, despite going 1 of 5 in the field.
I think
field.
He only played in the first half, but yeah. The second half that the Oklahoma City Blues scored like 80 something points, I think. It was wild.
Interesting. Yeah, the G. So for those, I think it's important to maybe clarify that the G League is, while it's close to the top like world leagues in terms of talent, I think it is like a solid like mid tier to low tier in terms of scheming. They tend to be pretty poorly coached defense. I don't want to say coached, but because there's not a lot of continuity, there's no like training camp for G League teams, really, it's hard for them to run like coherent defensive schemes. So that's why you see so many wild scores sometimes, or like, you know, guys, you know, like fine players, but not NBA guys, like Kyle Guy can average like 21 efficiently over the course of a season. It's because like lots of times defenses just straight up can't handle like certain types of players, like movement shooters, like at the G League level. It's just not a thing that defenses can properly scheme for. So that's I don't have much to add about that, but that'll probably kind of come up every time. We'll be like, oh, you know, Scoot Henderson, 31 points, but super inefficient. What happened? Well, the defenses are just a little weird. And sometimes that's just going to happen. And that's something you have to be conscious of when you're watching those games and doing scouting work for them. Coop, throwing it to you to talk about the number 4 ranked Kentucky Wildcats. Take it away.
Yeah, so this is going to be the opposite of Stone's breakdown because I barely have anything nice to say about this team, despite being pretty dominant in their first two games. They played Duquesne and Howard, and nobody on either team was really that good. Sorry. And then on Kentucky, Kasan Wallace is a dream. I love watching Kasan Wallace play. He can get to basically any shot on the floor. In the game against Duquesne, he hit like a moving corner curl three-pointer that was like pretty crazy. He's just like too hesitant to take them most of the time. He was able to get to his pull-up two, able to get into the lane for the most part. And his passing, I think, was really nice, actually. He had 4 assists and 4 turnovers. But every single one of those turnovers was a live ball turnover. He has the right idea. He's trying to slink it in there to Lance Ware, Jacob Toppin, who either don't cut very hard or can't grab the ball or just suck. I was really encouraged by what I saw. Great point of attack defense. He is flying around. He's not being too irresponsible defensively. He's staying within his zone while still, you know, getting out there and being a bit adventurous, had some steals, had a block. Livingston was nice. I thought the shooting was good. He grabbed boards, but he's just so passive. It's really easy to forget he's there. A lot of the time the defense is meh. He gets beat by guys who he should not be getting beat by. He's strong and can shoot, but he just doesn't really get any shots. He rises and sinks into the corner really well. I think that's probably the best thing he does on offense, but it doesn't really seem like he's anything more than a shooter. I really love watching Antonio Reeves. I can't lie. He has been the best scorer. Yeah, he's been the leading scorer in both of these games, and he is just electric. He went 4 for 6 from 3, got to the free throw line a ton. He's not passing, he's not rebounding, he's not defending, but he is going to score that basketball. I think he's like a 4th or 5th year senior, if I recall correctly. Might even be 6th, I don't know. But he is so much fun to watch. Damian Collins and Oscar Tshiebwe sat both of these games. Tshiebwe, I don't remember what's wrong with him, but he might come back next week. And then Collins has an injured shoulder, which sucks because a guy I'm really excited to see, especially because Lance Ware and Jacob Toppin are probably my least favorite watches of, like, I love the big forward, big who runs and does stuff like that and jumps and tries hard, but they don't run very hard and they don't really have that many skills. Toppin's hips are awful, just like his brother's. He can't really get down in the stance, and Ware just doesn't really do anything. It's not like this team is not fun, especially with Sevier Wheeler off the bench. Despite throwing 11 assists, he has the exact same problem where he can't use his offhand. Sheboy's going to come back. They're going to be good. But I mean, being ranked 4th in the country, at least with this roster, I don't know if I'm all the way there.
Yeah, this is sort of a weird team. You mentioned like Reeves and Wheeler. Both those guys came off the bench. They started Livingston, Ware, and Toppin together. I'm fascinated to see what it looks like when they're...
Oh,
like...
and CJ Frederick is sometimes impossible to watch. His decision-making is baffling at times. He's just not aggressive. And he's like this white guy who played like 30. He played more minutes than anybody else on the floor. I don't even know where he came from, but he is just, I don't know. And so much of this team is unenjoyable. And then Kasan Wallace comes on the floor and it's like, holy shit, this guy is a shot in the arm. He's flying around and grabbing the boards. And then their other favorite fun player is Antonio Reeves off the bench. when he's their leading scorer, leading shot taker, all this stuff.
Yeah, it's just really funky. I'm interested to see what Cal does. I would think like the highest upside group for this team would be, you know, Frederick, Wallace, Reeves, you know, Livingston or Toppin, and Shibue. But I have no idea what they're going to go with. This is like just a weirdly set up team. Is it Uchenna Onyenso? He was someone who, Ugonna Onyenso was someone I actually liked a little bit of high school. I assumed he wouldn't play at all, but obviously with the absence of Shibue, he played a little bit. It looks like he did all right. I won't comment too much, but I liked him a little bit out of high school. So anyways, I will go next with Alabama. I was not able to watch the Longwood game. That's the one I really wanted to watch, but for some reason it wasn't on Synergy for me to watch. So I wasn't able to watch it. So I watched Alabama dismantle Liberty pretty comfortably. It was kind of a close game at halftime, and then they outscored Liberty 55-28 in the second half. The real, you know, guy to watch here is Brandon Miller, of course. He went 4 of 5 from 3, 6 of 6 from the free throw line, 20 points, had 3 assists, 2 steals, a block, no turnovers. A pretty undeniably impressive game for a 6'8", 6'9", wing forward type. I think the big thing for me is he definitely raised the release on that jumper. I don't know if you guys remember, I talked about in our Alabama preview that I kind of didn't love Miller's mechanics on his jumper, thought there were some issues there. He's raised the release. He still does the legs play thing that I don't love, but he looks comfortable. I mean, he took some tough, tough shots in this game against Liberty. Really, really like catch as the trail man, pull up with a hand in his face, threes type shots. And they went in. He looks comfortable taking them. He still like is just not someone who can really get downhill. He just does not get all the way to the rim very much. When he does, it's off. You know, Liberty is not full of great athletes. They don't really have wings to guard him, right? I think the SEC is going to make it even tougher. A lot of his passes just came from the top of the key. He's not really running pick and roll and like getting anywhere. He just like he'll pick up the ball and then he can make a nice read from a standstill. But he's not necessarily running around and getting places. The lateral quickness still worries me. He plays super stiff and really straight up. But he made some plays. I mean, 2 steals, quick. He has quick hands. Like, I think that's the big standout for me defensively is as stiff as the rest of his body is, his hands are smooth and his hands are quick. And he's kind of just poking the ball away, getting in passing lanes. He does some fun stuff there. I think defensively is, if he could just be like a 3-and-D guy who makes good decisions, like that is enough to make him a real prospect. There are some who are going to really try and sell him as like the shot creator type. And I just don't see it. Like, I don't think he has the body for it. I don't think his handle is really to that level. But if he can just be like 3-and-D, good decision maker, can occasionally create his own shot off the bounce, like if it's going to be a pull-up, okay, that's something. But I'm interested to see just – I feel like I'm going to be constantly fighting the narrative with Miller this year, if that makes sense. Like, I just think there's going to be a lot of, oh, he's a shot creator, oh, like – you know, this is a 6'8", 19-year-old doing this and this, and I'm just going to be probably more like, listen, slow down. He is built to win at the college level in a lot of ways, and here's where a lot of that doesn't translate. I'm interested to see how it goes. I'm definitely not a fan, but I have my worries. Mark Sears really stood out here, just picking apart Liberty. I'm not the biggest fan of him as like an NBA guy, but looked really nice off the bounce. 5 turnovers was rough. A couple of those were just really dumb passes that I think he'll cut out when he's not trying to do so much. Like, I think a lot of it was just him realizing he is better than Liberty and thinking he can do things that even against Liberty he can't do. I think those will be fine. My favorite player on this team is Jaden Bradley, and he really, really impressed me. 3 assists, only 1 turnover, 2 steals. Both those steals looked like really impressive. I think he's going to be a steals monster and really got downhill, like just got to the rim all the time, which is like, he's not like an absurd athlete, but it's just his pace and his feel really does some fun stuff there. I think he's a really fun guard prospect. I hope he starts down the line. I feel like that starting lineup is pretty set, but I really like Jaden Bradley. I think he is a potential like starting guard type prospect. Maybe he's more of like a bench guy, but if he could shoot, which he didn't take any threes in this game in 26 minutes, which is a bit of a worry, but can really get downhill, makes good decisions. Finally, Rylan Griffin played a lot in this game, 23 minutes. He's like a wing shooter type, you know, plays defense. He has long arms. He's listed as 6'5", but he sort of looks taller because he has such long arms. Kind of noted as more of like a shooter. And he hit a couple tough shots. He's had a bit of a rough start to the year shooting-wise, but I think things will even out. I think he's a pretty good shooter. So that's kind of like an interesting trio of freshmen to monitor for this Alabama team with Bradley, Griffin, and Miller. And I think those are three guys who are all potentially first-round worthy, depending on how things click going forward. Rylan Griffin really, really popped to me. In sort of limited minutes because he doesn't have like a huge role, but makes good reads on defense. And I think he can really shoot the lights out going forward. So that's my spiel on Alabama. I think Nate Oates is a great coach. I think they're going to be one of the top teams in the country by year's end. I think they're a top 10 team, if I'm being honest. But I'm going to be kind of pushing back, I think, on a lot of the narratives when it comes to, you know, whether or not Brandon Miller specifically is like a top five guy. All right, Stone, let's go to the Florida State, the 0-2 Florida State Seminoles. Take it away.
Yeah, I think unfortunately a part of that was the suspension of Baba Miller, which I will, you know, sort of not get too into because I don't want to frustrate myself, but it's just ridiculous and frustrating and stupid. And I can't wait to watch Baba Miller once he does get back to playing into the NCAA, who is terrible. So I'm going to get into the game versus Stetson, which they lost. I think I said UCF. I didn't watch the UCF game. I think I said that earlier for another team, and I'm just realizing I made that mistake. But I didn't watch the UCF game. I watched the Stetson game, and I thought that I'll start really quick with Stetson, who I've never watched a game of really to my recollection. They had somebody named Luke Brown, who I had never heard of. Apparently, he played for Ball State last year and averaged 3 points in 12 minutes. He had 27 points in this game off the bench, went 7 of 11 from three. Absolutely insane. It looked like some video game type shots. Like he was just making threes from all over. Couldn't stop him. He had like one really high off the glass layup. Just like ridiculous shots that shouldn't be made by anybody really. And it was just his night, I guess. So that was pretty interesting. For the FSU side, there's really two guys I'm watching, although Caleb Mills ended up looking decent in this game, really aggressive towards the rim, and they're playing him at times as their lead guard. So, but with Matt Cleveland, he definitely I don't know if you guys have watched FSU yet, but Matt Cleveland definitely looks like he put on some weight and bulk this year, a lot thicker than he was last year. He looks like pretty beefy. And which is good, because I think that was a thing that held him back in certain degrees last year. The concern I had throughout this game was the lack of creation of space. I think that that's something that he's going to have to work on this year. He had one really nice step back, but it was like he's such a good shooter that it went in. It was more what it was. He created such limited space, but because he was such a good shooter, it went in, and it was nice, high-arcing-looking shot. That thing's not really going to fly, I think, in the NBA. So I think creating more space off of these step-backs or getting to the rim with more of a plan is my hopes for him throughout this year. Although he played fairly well in this game, and defensively I thought he looked really good on the perimeter. He mirrored guys very well defensively and was fairly really disciplined, I think, as well. I don't think I can really say the same for Jalen Worley in terms of the disciplinedness. I don't know if that's a word, but I just made it one on defense. And he was a little bit overly aggressive, I think. Had some like gambles that he probably shouldn't have taken, jumped. He was the main guy they went to in scramble situations defensively. So like wherever the ball was where Jalen Worley was flying to. And to his credit, he did a good job of getting there. I just think that there were times where he was a little bit like over aggressive trying to get the ball and may have made it a little too easy for the offense. So that's just something he's going to have to, you know, tighten up throughout the season. He had a lot of these quick, like right hand in and out dribbles that he used, Jalen Worley, that is, and it was pretty effective. I'd like to see him do it more with his left hand. I feel like he favors his right a little too much, too predominantly. But overall, I thought he had a fairly good game, especially as a cutter. I thought he made really strong and like decisive cuts. Like as soon as he would get the ball to somebody else, he'd like cut as soon as he let go of the ball, and it would be really strong. And he had two or three of those cuts that ended up he converted. So. I liked what I saw from both of these guys, but there's definitely things to work on, especially when you're playing a team like Stetson that's not really shouldn't be as much of an opponent as they were for Florida State. So hopefully, you know, they'll continue to work on those things while continuing the good that came out of this game as well.
Yeah, it's just sort of a weird start. I mean, obviously, Matthew Cleveland had an all right game against Stetson. And then the UCF is not a bad team. And they have a really I don't want to say like it's slightly too bad you didn't get to that game, because they do have a really good potential prospect. I'm trying to think of what his name is. Hendricks in Taylor Hendricks, who's like a 6'9" funky shooter type, smooth athlete for UCF. But yeah, I mean, you know, Matthew Cleveland only taking two shots in that game, looks like maybe injury stuff. You know, I like Cam Corin, but yeah, just like a weird start for this team. Interested to see how Florida State develops, I guess is the term I'll use. Coop, you have two teams to talk about, so throw it to you first. Talk about the Florida Gators. Take it away with the SEC team of the night.
Yeah, so the much better Florida team that I definitely wanted over that awful, disgusting FSU team. I big brain stone into this one. So Florida played Stony Brook, and then they played Kennesaw.
Great Kennesaw name, by State. The way, W. Stony Brook.
Yeah. Stony Brook was, I only watched the Stony Brook game, but that was a religious experience for me as an Alex Fudge fan. This was easily Fudge's best offensive game as a college player. Had 12 shots, 16 points, only 3 rebounds, no assists, no steals or blocks, which is kind of disappointing. But Stony Brook ran a zone for a lot of the game, and they would throw Fudge into the middle of the zone, get him a little pass from Lofton or Will Richard, and then he'd turn, he'd be aggressive, he'd make one dribble, and he had some nice dump off passes that got fumbled or dropped, but then he had a nice floater, he could get right into the rim. And he hit 2 threes, okay? And one of them was an off the dribble. He hit like a little move and then like pulled it back a little bit, hit an off the dribble 3. If you were telling me that Alex Fudge in his first game as a Gator hit an off the dribble 3, I think I wouldn't have believed you. I would have called you a liar. And I think I would have just screamed at you. But really, really impressive for him. And then Will Richard also played really, really well. Only 5 field goal attempts, but had 14 points, moved the ball, cut off ball, was playing great, great defense, had 2 steals. Just such a fun duo. And it's a shame they have Fudge coming off the bench behind CJ Felder, because I think Fudge is just better. like watching CJ Felder, I think he's like older and gets the seniority thing. Yeah, he's a senior. He's a little bit smaller, way worse defender. I think he can shoot is kind of the other thing. But Fudge and Castleton have like a really fun high-low chemistry that I would really like to see them exploit more. I mean, Castleton, just dominant as he always is. You saw the stretch out to the short mid-range, stretch out to three didn't really show up. And then Kyle Lofton played well, hit some threes, or hit a three and was good. And the other star on this this Florida team, Kawasi Reeves, just an electric shooter, went 2 for 5, had 8 points, didn't really do anything else, played some solid defense, but he is constantly sprinting around the court, so much energy. You know, he's a big, like 6'6", lanky wing. I think he's going to be like him, Richard, and Fudge are kind of like the ceiling raisers for a team that has a pretty solid baseline with Castleton and Lofton. We did a whole podcast on it, but this Florida team's fun. And then we will hop right into Arkansas, which is...
Hold up, just really fast. I just want to say, a game where Will Richard and Alex Fudge combined for 30 points on, 4 of 7 from three and 10 of 17 from the field. Yeah, I need to watch this game like expeditiously, because that just sounds like my shit right there. I really, really love, like, those two are two of my favorite players in the country. We talked about it in their preview. I think Florida is sneakily like a top 15, 20 team in the country, and I think they're going to prove that soon. Anyways, go ahead and move on to your Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, I have a lot of love for this Razorbacks team. Nick Smith Jr., their top prospect, didn't play, but Jordan Walsh, Anthony Black, and transfer Jerron Brazil all played. And in the first game, Brazil was like dominant. I think he had 20 something points and was just destroying guys on the inside. He was making jumpers. I mean, he was just getting whatever he wanted. And I thought Anthony, what the fuck? Sorry. I was pulling up the box score and I got sound. It was annoying. And then Anthony Black, by the box score, it looks like he played bad, but I thought he had a really nice game. He had a really nice two-man game going with Makai Mitchell and Kamani Johnson. And holy shit, it is not that fucking ESPN. Sorry, it is late at night. But they had a nice two-man game going. I really like his off-ball play. We know what he can do on ball. The passing is there. The ball handling is there. Getting into the lane, throwing up floaters, that kind of stuff. But cutting, moving, getting it. Like comfortable as a shooter, even though he didn't take any three-point shots in the North Dakota game. That's really what he needs to do. The other big standout guy was Ricky Council IV, who basically turned into bubble Jamal Murray for just a random game. His touch was just insane. He was hitting pull-ups, crazy contortion layups. I mean, if you're not going to watch the game, go and watch the highlights of that Ricky Council IV performance. It was pretty impressive. I mean, Trevon Brazil also had 12 rebounds, just so dominant. It's really hard to stop someone that athletic when you're North Dakota State. It's understandable. I don't think he's like that game really transformed him into a lottery pick or whatever, especially because he had 8 and 8 against Fordham and played considerably worse defense as well. But, you know, he's nice. This Jordan Walsh got the start in this game. And he was someone who I'm really high on Jordan Walsh. I can't even lie. Had 12 points on 7 shots, played pretty good defense, rebounded the ball. I really liked his driving kick whenever he wouldn't get stymied like halfway to the rim. It wasn't as bad as Sohan's, but his driving and then stopping at like above the elbow, like Jeremy Sohan, really, really annoyed me. But he would make quicker decisions, quicker pass outs, that kind of stuff. And Ant Black played way better this game by the numbers, but I think the defense was better, but the offense was worse despite the shots falling. I mean, this team, I really think they could make it to like the Elite Eight for the third year in a row, Final Four type stuff. If the talent can really gel, it's just really a weirdly constructed team, because Devo Davis is like the only guy who's been there beyond this year. Everybody else is a transfer or a freshman. And I mean, Devo Davis is good. I mean, he had like this crazy pocket pass to Mekhi Mitchell in that game that I clipped. And I was like screaming when I saw he like pulls back for a step back, nails him, bullets it right on the roll. But it's just, you could see this really going either way. And Eric Musselman's really got his work cut out for him, this team.
Yeah, I think we like preseason anointed like this team is like true championship contenders. But yeah, it's going to take a little bit. I'm realizing, you know, this is 2 years watching for me a WSU team that is made up a lot of transfers or people who don't have experience within the program. It takes a little bit to kind of get things going. Like, even if you have a lot of talent, you can lose to teams that are less talented but have more continuity, because you just, your guys haven't figured out their roles yet. Basketball is a game that requires people to gel together and figure out how to play together, and that takes time sometimes, even if you're really good. All right, I think that's good for the team recaps. Let's move quickly on to a mailbag. We only have about 5-6 questions here. This is from Tim Smith, best breakout prospects from the first few college games. That he's at QK Hoops on Twitter. So I think the guy for me is Andrew Rode, obviously, because he came out of nowhere for me from St. Thomas. But I feel like there hasn't been a guy who's really just taken everything by storm early. Like, there's no one who's just, maybe the answer is Brandon Podziemski from Santa Clara, who was at Illinois last year, Malik Renault from Indiana has gotten a lot of early buzz. I have not watched Indiana yet, so I don't want to say too much. I have watched a little of Santa Clara. Podziemski does look very good, very, very confident taking shots. Illinois, it honestly looks like they missed out on the star. Like, he's like the type of guy who, like, the shots he's making, it's not like this is just like, oh, it's Santa Clara and he's playing, you know, bad teams. It's like, no, like, he's getting these shots off. He's probably not scoring 30 in Illinois, but he is, like, really seems like they missed out on a stud there. Coop Stone, do you guys have any thoughts on breakout prospects in the first few games?
I mean, for me, it was the Luke Brown game. I'd never even heard of him. It was just unexpected and wild. Again, he scored 3 points at Ball State the year before, so I don't know how real 7-11 from three is and 27 points a game, but that was pretty wild to watch. I haven't honestly just watched a ton of basketball yet. Still really early in the season, and I had somewhat of a busy week, so I wasn't able to get to, you know, the basketball I would have liked. But that's of the games I've seen, that's my breakout candidate, Luke Brown, future NBA champion.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's like a like super breakout e guy, but someone who I liked but has even outperformed my expectations. Mike Shirov jumps, Mongolian Mike out of Dayton, like 6'8". And you know, I've seen some of his stuff at Hoop Summit and all this stuff, but he came in and he was like whipping passes like around his head and like nailing rollers with like misdirection with his eyes. And he's got real ball skills, like, and he can shoot, he can defend, just a ton of fun to watch. And I think him and De'Ron Holmes are going to be super, super dynamic duo that could get Dayton super, super far. And Shirov Jumps is, I mean, could end up a top 20 guy pretty easily, even in this pretty stacked draft.
Yeah, I really like that Dayton team in general. I can't wait to dive into some of their games. Expect clips of that coming this week at some point. Tyler Wilson says, Langston Love, ? Send tweet. I've not watched Baylor yet. They're just not a team high on my list. I don't think they're a great context for evaluating defense. You know, PD's piece on the no middle was great, but it's also just a reminder that it's really hard to take stuff away from that type of stuff sometimes. So yeah, Keontae George looked good. So maybe I'll be biting my tongue on him because I said I was lower on him in the preseason, but we'll see how that goes. This is from Paul at YRAVG, Rockets fan, your average Rockets fan. I got that eventually. Jarace Walker, top 10 pick, question mark. I would say he's leaning towards that. I don't know if he'll be top 10 on my board, but if he's even kind of a legit primary bet, then he should be. Because dudes built like him who are even kind of legit primary bets come around never. You know, the last one was... I mean, I feel like it's disingenuous to say Julius Randle, but like Julius Randle was a better prospect than the player he's become, I feel like. And he's still a pretty fine player. Like, you'd be happy Julius Randle top 10 in most drafts, I think. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think Jarace is probably a top 10 pick come June of 2023. Coop Stone, are you guys sort of with me? I know it's obviously super early and we haven't done deep dives, so don't take us like for 100% on this, but just in general vibe, are we feeling Jarace Walker top 10 pick?
I think I had him.
Jarace Walker top 5 pick. I mean, that's all I gotta say there. No, he's defaulted into my 5 spot because I refuse to build my board out past 5 or past 4, and he's the first guy who I think of whenever I start listing guys after 4. But I mean, creator bet, super athletically gifted, like really talented defensively. I didn't super dig into him in the Houston section because there were 40 guys I had to hit on, but his defense looks really, really advanced for a freshman. Even like for a Coug freshman, he looks really, really good. I just need to see him get more passing stuff. And in the first game, he didn't really get many reps there because of the zone, and they didn't give him a bunch of turns like attacking from the perimeter. But in the second game, they were feeding him the ball in like the mid post and the 3-point line, and he could just get to wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted physically. And you can see his reaction speed is so, so fast. It's just at a certain point, if they can fix the jumper some and they let him make more reads, like he, at a certain point, he has to be a top 10 pick.
Yeah, you think he'll push above Marcus Sasser to get even higher in your top 5, or
no? Marcus Sasser, I mean,
that's obviously not a joke either.
He's got a firm hold on the number 2 spot, so I mean, it's tough for anybody to get there.
Houston is going to have 7 top 30 picks on Coop's board, so
Wilson is
going to be my 25th ranked player this year. Let's go.
Oh my gosh. I don't even know how to follow that up. I had him as a lotto guy coming into this year. I haven't watched Houston, so until I do, that's probably where I'll just leave him for now.
And then at Michael Wong 77 says, thoughts on TCU this year? They're okay. I mean, Mike Miles is really good. But I think they've kind of started off rough, if I remember right. And I just don't know about that roster as a whole. Last year, I thought they were pretty good, pretty underrated. But you know, let me check on how their season has gone thus far.
Yeah, they eke one out against the Arkansas Pine Bluff, which is kind of rough.
And then they only won by 11 against Lamar, who is not even a particularly good. A good mid-major. Yeah, Mike Miles Jr. is a stud, right? Like, Mike Miles Jr. is legitimately a prospect. He's really good. Micah Peavy is still just like, can he actually shoot? Eddie Lampkin Jr. is a fun, you know, chunky big boy. Chuck O'Bannon gets on the board. I really like Damian Baugh. Like, I can't help myself but love Damian Baugh.
Every single time we talk about TCU, it's Damian Baugh.
Bryce is going to have 15 TCU prospects in his first round.
All right. I think they're probably a tournament team, but it might be a little closer than we hope. Drew Good and Suit, who's a great follow. Go follow them. They do a ton of great work. Yeah. Also a great name.
Elite clips. Elite stuff.
Just W's all around.
Maybe off topic, but what streaming services resources do you guys utilize to watch games? It really depends. I use Synergy for most of my college stuff. And then I will use YouTube occasionally if I'm just trying to go fast. I will sometimes, if it's sort of cheating, but sometimes I will use those edited games where you only see every made basket. because those are just great. Like, it just gives you, especially like if I'm watching to get a sense of the team and not a specific player, like, oh yeah, let me just see all the shots made on them and all the shots they make in our game, on a game. It gives me a sense of which actions they run that work. It gives me a sense of how they like to guard pick and roll, because a lot of buckets come out of pick and roll, even if you're playing really good defense. So yeah, just stuff like that is great. Coopstone, I'm guessing you guys are mostly the same.
I use Synergy for all of my needs, and I'm not paid to say that. I would also suggest, if you're on a budget, if you do enough digging around on YouTube, and back when I had a Facebook, I could find some games on like Facebook Watch, I think, or
and Facebook Live. Facebook Live has a ton of like international games. I don't know why, but they do.
There's free options out there if you're willing to suffer through, you know, 2 hours of scrolling and clicking. But there's definitely stuff out there if you're on a budget.
Also, plenty of leagues just post like you can watch every single NBL game from, like, the past 3 years on YouTube. All the OTE games are on YouTube. If a high school or AAU team are worth their salt, they will find a way to post their game. Like, the my biggest pet peeve is when high school teams don't post their games on YouTube. It's like, it's such a stupid, easy way to get everyone to see your kids. Just post full games on YouTube. It's so easy. Even my high school did it, and my high school was stupid backwards Richland. So, all right. Anyways, really fast, Paulo Alves, what products do you use in your hair? I use a medicated shampoo because I have dangerously bad dry scalp, so I have to use medicine on my head. Oh my god.
That's exactly what he wanted to hear. He wanted to hear the inside scoop on Bryce's scalp.
I also use Head and Shoulders, so there you go.
That's why it's dry. Not use Head and Shoulders.
The Head and Shoulders is good for like dandruff and stuff. I use the tea tree oil.
Terrible.
What do you fucking put in your hair?
Let me give my hair breakdown. Okay. Eggs so I sorry. So I will wash my hair every 2-ish days. Okay, that's what I like to do. I'm on a schedule there. Can't overwash it, or else your hair's gonna be screwed. I use a tea tree oil revitalizing shampoo and conditioner set. If you all are really interested, I'll post the link. Don't worry. I know you guys are really invested.
I'll post a tutorial.
Yeah.
Make sure to follow us on TikTok.
Yeah. Make sure to follow us on TikTok for the hair tutorial reveal for all of this. And then I air dry it, and then I just let it do whatever it wants. I don't use any products, nothing like that, because I'm lazy. Stone, what about you? I sometimes comb it, but only sometimes.
So this isn't visual, but in order to get the locks that I do, you have to wash this once a day. I do use medicated shampoo on top of conditioner to get the volume right. If you can't see, my hair is like pretty long. So, and then I, you know, every day, make sure you dry it really well. It'll get nice and soft. And that's pretty much my routine. I haven't tried the eggs thing yet. I have heard about it though. So, follow us on TikTok. Maybe that's something we'll do.
Y'all gotta stop. This is too much.
In all seriousness, though, like, keep posting questions because we love them. And also, they don't always have to be basketball. Like, we're definitely a basketball podcast, but it is a nice, like, fun break here and there to not be 100,000% basketball. So,
yeah, well, especially
all questions are welcome, is what I'm saying.
As the year goes on. Stone's locks are so impressive, man. God damn. I'm not shaving because it's November, and I feel like this is like the most hair I've had on my body for like a fat minute. And I'm like, I'm feeling the vibe. I dunked this morning, and I was like, ooh, like my hair like bounced. It's like it's it feels like high school again. But no,
Rex is going Geico caveman.
This was, my girlfriend hates it, but I'm like, you got 18 more days until I shave. But because all my, I coach in middle school now, and all the kids were like, you can't shave. There's no shave. No, they all have like shitty little mustaches growing. And I'm like, okay, I won't shave, but y'all can't shave either. So, and I have both eighth and seventh graders. So there's like major differences in height and like how developed they are. Cause that like 12 to 13 is like a major year for most kids. So, anyways, it's really funny. So yeah, I got the beard slowly growing in. My hair is hella long. If at least for me, it feels long, not as long as Stone's, but, all right, guys, this was great. Again, we'll tweet out next week, for more mailbag questions. So, keep those coming. Hopefully we'll watch even more. So like, I'll have actual thoughts on TCU, or I need to get to Indiana this week. That's like the big, like, got to see Hood Schifino and Renault and those fucking guys. Want to watch Ohio State too. So
and Miller Kopp.
It's just hard for me. It's just hard for me because it's Big Ten. And every time I watch Big Ten basketball, I want to gouge my eyes out.
It's sickness inducing having to watch any Big Ten basketball.
I'd be a happy man if I never had to watch Iowa basketball play again. If I never had to watch a Fran McCaffrey coach team ever, I'd die happy.
I am dreading the
UCLA
the
Chris will always Murray. Exist though.
Yeah. Or Purdue.
Oh my god, yeah. They don't even have Ivy this year, so it's just
like,
gonna be
EDF. I honestly think I was too low on some of the Big Ten guys simply because they played in the Big Ten last year, and I hated watching them play so much. It's like it is, and now they are picking up UCLA, USC, Andy Enfield, and Mick Cronin are gonna make that conference even more disgusting.
Well, what's great is they're condensing the worst part of the Pac-12. And the entirety of the Big Ten, which is the worst part of the Big Ten, and making it one super conference, so we know to what we can avoid it so much easier.
Oh yeah, that's true. We could
Doc Rivers is bound to be a Big Ten coach.
Give it 3 years, and we're going to see Doc Rivers at Northwestern, letting the boys know.
Doc Rivers is going to join what's his face's coaching staff at Nebraska. It's going to be
Hoiberg. See, I was about to say, I was like, you know, you brought up Miller Kopp. If Doc Rivers was coaching at Northwestern, he wouldn't have left. That's all.
You just need to add Jim Boylan, and they'll have the Infinity Stones of coaches.
Someone's gonna hire Jeff Van Gundy in the Big Ten before you know it. It's gonna be okay. Anyways, all right, guys. For Coop at Ali _ Oop _ Coop, for Stone at Report _ Court, I'm at Bryce Cedric 14. Give us a like, rating, review, all that fun stuff. Follow us on TikTok. At some point, we're gonna get the YouTube up and going. I've just been absolutely slammed with school shit, but it's almost like Christmas time, and like that's actually things like calm down for me. So hopefully soon. But again, thank y'all for listening. This has been the Upside Swings NBA Draft Podcast. We hope Waiter Ceiling. Thank you.
We once again like to thank our sponsors at GlobalShopSolution.com. Simplify your manufacturing and schedule a demo today at GlobalShopSolutions.com. Thank you.